All right. Tonight, our main speaker, all the way from Aurora Grande.
Yeah.
Yay. Proud to introduce Eileen. Come on up.
Yeah.
My name is Eileen, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
My sobriety date is October 6, 2008, and I have 7 years of continuous sobriety. My home group is the Back to the 40s group, Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. up on the Mesa in Aurora Grande, the Five Cities group. I was taught to start my leads that way, and it always is a good base for me to let you guys know that I'm serious about my program. And I have a sobriety date that I remember. I've been told that if you don't remember your sobriety date, your last drink, maybe you haven't had it yet. I had a lot of last drinks, but I couldn't stay sober because I didn't want to do all of the suggestions, and I never read the book, and it kept me going in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years. I was somebody that was a hopeless alcoholic, and it was nothing but the power of God that could have kept me sober for 7 years. Because due to my own devices, there was no way that I could keep more than a few months. Usually it was a few weeks. And when Alexandra was reading the traditions, I noticed tonight the tradition about our primary purpose to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And I want to let you know that if you're suffering in this room tonight, you're in the right place. And that God could and would if sought. When I heard that in the traditions, it reminded me that what we all have in common is we have suffered. Each person that is in this room, we wouldn't go to these lengths to come to these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous if we all didn't have that in common, that we have suffered from alcoholism. And today I'm a recovered alcoholic, contingent on the maintenance. And briefly, in a nutshell, I spent my whole life as a lifestyle. It was a complete and utter lifestyle for me that was one of the reasons why I was so identified with the lifestyle of drinking that I couldn't see past that, and I didn't want to uncover what I was trying to cover up. They say what we do around here is uncover, discover, and discard. And over the slow process, I'm a sometimes slowly person, and I have to be patient knowing that my growth rate is at my higher power's will. I've tried to will myself into growth, and it really has been a slow, steady process of coming to meetings daily, keeping a commitment. This entire 7 years, I've always had a service commitment, and working the steps and living in the steps. I love how the steps are synergistic, and I love how I never really understood them because as a child, I was a reader, and then when I got into my party life, I never read at all. And so when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt scared of doing the steps because I felt like I didn't have enough brain cells to put together to understand what they meant. But I had to, I was told that it's to the best of your ability. And so that's different for each person. And my ability in the beginning, I remember I always argued with my sponsor. Always. And I actually, the first sponsor I ever had, this was back when I was around 20 years old. I'm 33 now, but the first sponsor I ever had wanted me to tell her about my life and make a timeline of what I'd gone through in my whole life so she could get to know me. That was her tactic. And I didn't want to. I completely refused. And I wanted to pick a fight with her over having me do this. It's like I wanted to get well, but I didn't want to tell you what was wrong with me. And so I started picking a fight with her, and she said, I can't fight somebody that doesn't have any armor. And that was like an echo chamber. I mean, I've remembered it all the way until now, because as newcomers, like, we're just swinging in the dark. Like, we don't even know, really. For me, as someone that was swallowed whole by alcoholism, I didn't even know up from down. I could not differentiate the truth from a lie. And so when I was trying to argue with her, she looked at me as a sick person, and she didn't enable me. She let me go, and I went and relapsed and hit bottom again and again and again. And I remember I was in a meeting like 9 years ago or something, and I shared in the meeting that I had flushed an ounce of weed down the toilet in the meeting room. Aren't you guys proud that I just did that? You could have heard a pin drop in that room. It was very gnarly, because that's how twisted and turned around my thinking was as a newcomer. With my disease, it's so selfish and self-centered that I thought you guys would pat me on the back, when actually everybody was like, you need to leave. Like, you're not supposed to bring drugs into this sacred place. Like, they did not like that I did that. And that, and I went on another run after that, blaming Alcoholics Anonymous without ever having to read the book, without ever having done a four-step. I did 1, 2, and 3, but 1, 2, and 3 cannot be effective unless immediately followed by a four-step. And I never did that until this time around. And I'm just lucky by the grace of God that I was even able to tinker with my disease that long. And now today I work with a lot of sponsees that like to play games with their disease. And I couldn't outrun it. I had to be humbled over and over and over to really dedicate my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, because my life was dedicated to booze. And, you know, when I've never actually been completely 100% honest with you guys when I've told my story, and I've kind of been yo-yoing around thinking about this before the meeting, because I've never actually, like, said, you know, like, my story had to do with a lot of, like, you know, drugs and all of that kind of thing, because I was so afraid of that unity. I didn't want to break the unity, and I really respect Alcoholics Anonymous. It's everything to me. And so I've never truly, like, told the story, because on page 103 it says, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we've stopped fighting anything, anybody, or anything we have to. And so bottles were only a symbol. Bags were only a symbol. All of those are just like schematics that really are just covering up their symptom of that underlying disease, that ism of I, self, and me. So I kind of yo-yoed around, like, you know, maybe it really doesn't matter what people think is the truth. The fact is, we all share the common solution. And so I just wanted to touch on that, that I really respect our traditions, and if it means I have to kind of, like, you know, say I was a daily drinker and not talk about all the stuff I did while drinking, which was a lot of drugs, then I don't need to do that, because what really matters is what's in the book, and there's a lot more than just talking about drugs. Even though I love how Dr. Bob's story used to be called Dr. Addict Alcoholic. And I don't want, you know, sometimes people get afraid of that. And this is the most undiluted program. I've done all the other programs. I used to live in L.A., and I did all kinds of other stuff and workbooks and all this stuff because I was self-obsessed. So I was always working on myself, unable to help others, unable to be a service because I'm so self-obsessed, constantly working on me with my magic magnifying mind. And so I didn't really get down to that simple, this is a simple program. And when I'm overcomplicating it, I just overcomplicate my ass right out that door because I start blowing things up into a whole nother way that was never, God wasn't able to get into my thinking because I was putting all of this other stuff to distract myself away from the solution, which is meant to be my purpose. The reason why we were spared was to be of maximum service. I'm a servant. That is the reason why I was spared after tinkering over and over and over. It's like the amount of things that could have happened to me that didn't are astounding. I mean, I've heard of a lady that woke up out of a blackout, tied up in a bathtub, hearing people in the next room talk about how they were going to dismember her. Like, that could have happened to me. And instead, like, she got spared. She got out of, woke up. You know, sometimes I would get woke up like stone cold sober. Someone would say something, and whoa, and all of a sudden I'm shocked into sobriety. And today I'm happy when I wake up in the morning and I know what happened last night. All those small things I lose sight of sometimes because they were so exciting when I was new, and then I forget about them as time passes. So I've heard old timers talk about keeping it green. And that's really important to remember where I came from. I had a problem with the word God. It's written so much in the steps that was an excuse that I used was the word. But I was really caught up on schematics, just like how I was caught up on whether it was this drug or that drug or this workbook or that program. I couldn't just simple it down to the root of what is. And really, I love how the book talks about that God is a creator. It's a presence. It's when you look up into the sky and see the stars and wonder where they all came from. Keeping myself curious is really important. I remember when I was new, I was told to look for miracles daily, small miracles. And if I can't feel the presence of God, to go outside and feel the hands of God on my back by the sun rays that come down from the sun in the morning. And I tried that. It was actual footwork that I could do to try and chip away at a conscious contact. And so daily I'm seeking, you know, when I get in the car, who's driving? Me or God? And really, I know that where I end up is exactly where I'm supposed to be. That's what I keep seeing is the angel is in the details. And that's my very favorite sign because I really see all of these very small miracles everywhere. I have a little card in my big book that I've been using lately, and it says, God, I humbly beg you to remove anything that stands in the way of a closer relationship with you. I love this card because there's a lot of things that I wasn't willing to give up, even in sobriety. I felt like reservations, they call them. I felt like if my mom died, then I probably couldn't go on anymore, and I would just go to the bitter end. And I had all these little thoughts in my mind of what I couldn't go on without. And as the years have gone by, I've gotten a chance to see what I could live without, and it has improved my program. And it's been able to see what's underneath holding it all together. So that strong foundation that I built in the first year of recovery was paramount. I can't say enough for what I did in that first year. I've been doing that same thing this year, especially. Those kind of interim years between the first year and right now where I'm at 7 years, there's kind of a gap right there where I don't really even know what happened. I was climbing the ladder of money, property, and prestige, basically, in recovery. And I was seeing, like, how well could I get to know the big book so I could beat you over the head with it? Like, I had some weird motives that I didn't know were even there until I was ready to see them. I didn't even know that I didn't know. Just like before, when I kept coming in and out and in and out and using all these excuses, I didn't know that I didn't know. And luckily, there were people that wouldn't enable me. You know, my higher power doesn't enable me. Like how we say, God will do for you what you can't do for yourself, but then God won't do for you what you can do for yourself. And I read that a few months ago in the Daily Reflections, and it blew my mind. I was like, yeah, there's some things that I've been kind of ordering off the menu that I'm not getting, but maybe that's, you know, because the things that I want are a lot of times not things that I need. I love that part in the big book. I think it's in Freedom of Bondage that talks about I get everything that I need, and at the end I find out that what I wanted was what I needed all along. And that is always how it ends up, is this beautiful tapestry. It really is astounding to watch. I'm finally becoming aware, like how they say, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. And I am so glad I didn't, because I always cut and ran before. That was, like I said, my identity. And so I would just keep cutting and running, because I never did that inner footwork. And boy, do I feel like, I won the lottery just by being able to be sober today. And that's only because of the pain of those chains over and over. I actually have, I have this card about, it's in the second edition big book, and it's a story called The Professor and the Paradox. And I love this story because that's where the phrase surrender to win comes from. And it talks about we AAs surrender to win, we give away to keep, we suffer to get well, and we die to live. And this little card like kind of breaks down each one of those like it does in the story. And I found out a lot in my life that with my control issues, because that's what I found, we all have that in common. Alcoholics have major control issues. If I need to control anything in order to enjoy it, there's a problem there. And I have to look at that in my step 10 is, you know, what is seemingly out of my control. And sometimes even my attitude is out of my control. And so I just pray. Anyway, the part about we die to live, I'm really into that right now. Because I've had a lot of health issues this year, and it's really opened my eyes a lot. I was pretty spoiled. Like, when I got sober, I got pretty darn good. I got really physically fit. I thought I was really spiritually fit. I kind of felt like I was all around fit. And then what I've heard old-timers talk about is, like, life goes in cycles, and you'll have a few years that are good years in sobriety, and there may be a few years that are just bad years. And I'm so glad that old-timers shared about sometimes there's some years that just aren't as good as other years, and that's normal, and that's okay. Anyway, the part about we die to live, it says, that is a beautiful paradox, straight out of the biblical idea of being born again, or losing one's life to find it. When we work our 12 steps, the old life of guzzling and fuzzy thinking and all that goes with it gradually dies, and we acquire a different and a better way of life. As our shortcomings are removed, one life of us dies and another life of us lives. We in AA die to live. And ever since the get-go, it seems like, you know, I was one big walking character defect. Like, I remember being new, walking around with a pen in my pocket, holding this pen like this, because I was waiting for somebody to piss me off so I could take this pen out and just go crazy. That's how off the hook. And that's why I've had to do a lot of work on where does that come from, that need to just lash out. Like, that is, that's something that God has taken from me. I would tell people I'm not fit to go out. I can't be around people because I was so unpredictable. Even in sobriety, I didn't know what was going to happen. I was like a ticking time bomb. And so I knew I had to work the steps or die. I've heard of people going to jail in recovery, and like I could have been one of those people with the anger issues that I had. And I knew that if I didn't do the work and continue to do the work, I would be held a prisoner, a captive of all of that shit that I was dragging around that anyone could trigger any time. It was like the world had the detonator switch to me, and I was just these little explosions all day long. But luckily, what I did do on the contrary, because my sponsor said, if you don't do contrary action, you're one big contrary, like you have to live your life like one big contrary action, like first thought wrong, like basically my first thought was it needs to be my way or the highway. And I learned a lot through my service commitments. I'd start doing coffee and then someone would come in and they'd be getting in there wanting to do it their way, and it's like, this commitment doesn't belong to me. I'm just a trusted servant. So I would like share it. Make the coffee, and I would sit there like grinding my teeth, like, if that coffee looks bad, that's going to make me look bad. And don't you know that what you think of me defines who I think I am inside? And that's what I really have learned the most out of recently, because I identified so much with what I thought success was. And really, just like when I was new, success is nothing other than a successful present moment. And at this moment, I'm in a meeting, sharing recovery, haven't taken a drink today, got my mind focused on my higher power. I want to be a channel of thy peace. And to me, that there's really anything other than that is a gift. To even be upright and sitting in a meeting at this point is a gift. And I'm really happy that my higher power is there, because if I didn't have God, it would be all over. Just like on page 43, where it says, once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. And that has been exactly like this whole year. It's been, God, you trust God or not, really. It's like a free fall. And it's been amazing. It's been absolutely enthralling to get to know myself when everything I thought wasn't what I thought it was. And to just completely embrace, like I've heard somebody talk about how we strip the onion peel down, and inside is this gift, this gleaming jewel of our own true self. And I'm finding this amazing authenticity from a power greater than myself, because left to my own devices, I'd be kicking and screaming in self-pity 100% all the way. And instead, it's like when I was out there, I hustled. I hustled all the time. And so in here, I hustle for my program. Oh, I can't get up and get to a meeting? Put on a speaker tape. Oh, I don't understand what they're talking about? Slow down and breathe. Like, I just keep grabbing out which way can I be most effective, because every day when I wake up in the morning, I ask my higher power to direct my thoughts and my actions, my will and my life. And my higher power is forgiving. My higher power is non-judgmental. My higher power is all-inclusive, never exclusive, never forbidding. My higher power is patient and kind. And that's what people told me in the beginning, because I was real adverse to God. And they said, it's as you understand Him. It's in italics for a reason. And that it changes over the years. That's what I also heard from old timers, like their perception of their higher power, their connection changed over the years and deepened and grew. And they told me in the beginning, go to the ocean and say, stop. And those waves, they keep coming. And then they go, and I really did. I tried it out just to be like, let's see how this feels, you know? And it felt like I was the cog in the wheel. And that's what I always have to tell my one sponsee. Remember, you're not the car, you're the cog in the wheel. Because she calls, wow, my whole life is falling apart. It's like, nope, you're right on time, you're right on schedule. And we find ways to see that synchronicity. And it's always there if I'm keeping my eyes open and alert to, only I know what the signs are. There's something that means something to me, may not mean something to somebody else. But I know the backstory of all those signs, and each pawn has been placed perfectly, like this tapestry that is so intricate. And when I move far away, in retrospect, as the old timers have seen, it could have been no other way, because each disaster led me into something amazing, absolutely amazing, if I stayed sober, contingent on my maintenance daily. What is my maintenance? How do I keep my spiritual maintenance? By living in steps 10, 11, and 12 daily. Step 10 being step 4 through 9 daily. Step 11 being steps 2 and 3 daily. And step 12, service, love and service. And always step 1, because if I didn't do step 1, I'd forget I was an alcoholic and I'd drink. So I keep coming to meetings reminding me that I am an alcoholic. And, you know, I'm allergic, for sure. I always came in here, oh, well, I'm different. I'm a drug addict. And then I go do all these workbooks and everything, and it overcomplicated the whole thing and couldn't see the forest from the trees. And by then I get a resentment and a fight in a meeting, and then I'm out. And that was like a revolving story. So I'm really excited to get to be of service. When somebody asks me to share really anything, you know, putting away chairs or, you know, getting a chip, I get to practice the principles. I get to set aside my pride, set that aside, set it on the shelf. I was always told all the shit that I have with, you know, personalities, is set that on the shelf. And I can grab it if I want on my way out the door, but I have to mentally set it on the shelf while I'm in this sacred space. I know that in the very beginning I had my ass kicked so bad to the point that that gift of desperation has lasted me 7 years. And if I hadn't kept coming back to be able to hear the message, working with others, I mean, 90% of the time somebody relapses, they haven't been working with others. That's what I've heard, at least, and that's what I've seen, too. It's so important for me to get out of myself, and I have this little paper that I Xeroxed. It's a prescription from Dr. Bob, and it's pretty cool. It says, always remember it. 1, trust God. 2, clean house. 3, help others. Real simple. And for me, when I came in, it was like, oh my gosh, if you had the life I had, you know, if you had 2 brain cells you couldn't even rub together to make a spark, if you this and this, you know, I really felt like, but the thing is, I was also told by a previous sponsor, you can share about the problem all day long, but you have to share about the solution. That is your responsibility. I never wanted to take responsibility. That was really at the root of a lot of crap that I carried around. I never wanted to take responsibility. Responsibility turned into guilt and shame. I didn't know how to properly balance. And so today I'm learning about balance. I'm learning to balance honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I have to balance those in my life. The balance, like on step 5, where it talks about God, myself, and another human being. I love that order, because when I get it out of order, I'm all messed up. So daily I keep it God, focus. God, where is God in my life today? I offer myself to thee. Then myself. I take good care of myself. I love myself. And 3, others. But I get it all mixed up, and I always want to put others before all of that other stuff, and then I wonder why I'm resentful at whatever. It's my order was all messed up. My honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness was out of shape or lacking on one of those 3. And so I've really found how it's an inside job. I know that certain things can be told to me over and over and over, but it's like a stone that the sculptor is working on. It has to be hit several times, sometimes 100 times. And on that 99th time, it cracked all the way open. But it's from that continued perseverance over and over. And for me, that's how much ingrained that kind of thinking and behavior was. And I've realized that I'm creating myself, and I surround myself with people that inspire me, and then I work with others to get that compassion muscle growing. Really important for me to work on my understanding, because when I understand something or someone or where they're coming from, the resentment falls away, because I realize and it brings the compassion alive in my heart, and then all of a sudden the resentment is gone. So you guys have taught me all these tools. I was like, I was that hard rock on the outside when I was came in here, and now I've learned to surrender deeper and deeper every day, and embracing what is. And to one person, what is could be the worst thing on earth, and to the other, they can find the glimmers of the silver linings and the solution in all of that compost heap where lovely things grow. I've really found how you grow or you go. And just because I can't necessarily be an all-star in Alcoholics Anonymous because of my health now, I can't really be physically present all the time. I've found that I can read literature daily at my house, listen to the speaker tapes, call on the phone and say the magic words, how are you? And pray. In the old days, they only had one meeting a week. So a lot of times, they look forward to that meeting and they prayed in the meantime. Now we've got all these meetings and all this fellowship. Sometimes I can forget to pray because I'm leaning so hard on other people that are flawed and fallible. And my higher power is perfect in the imperfection, and it knows what I need. I don't know what's best for me. Daily I wake up thinking I should be healthy today. Well, apparently not, because I feel like I'm going to collapse most of the time. But I'm finding that smile, practicing my smile. I have to practice it. And so that's what I've been doing daily, being grateful, just like I was in the beginning. My sponsor made me keep a gratitude list daily. I did it every day for a year, for my first year. So I've been doing it again. Every day I'm posting about gratitude in my Facebook group, because that gets me involved, and it kind of keeps me accountable. So anyway, that's all I have to share. Thank you for letting me be a service.
Right. Let's give another hand of applause. All right. Now I'll turn the meeting back over to the secretary.
Thank you, Glenn, for being with us.
You're welcome.
All right.
Do you have any court cards? Just pass them up. I got one.
So I want to thank Tom. We had a moment last Saturday night where he had this insight that he needed a speaker. We wanted a woman for tonight, and Eileen was standing right there, and he asked, and I said, yeah, that's, and she said yes, and thank you so much